Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the flu vaccine shortage right after this message. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Yeah, that's right, the Ten Commandments. It's pretty obvious that something's wrong with them because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions. They've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. And this is a radical change in our political and our moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Hey, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent. That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention put 22 principles of that law into our Constitution, and they practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. That doesn't sound like separation of church and state to me. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law and the Ten Commandments, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. And if you don't know, and if you don't know, you don't have to know what that law is to suffer its effect. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the law of God, common law, natural law, karma, it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for, guess what? Adultery. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. We've been talking about the flu vaccine shortage. People are excited about that. 40,000 people die every year. I showed you last time that 20 years ago, it was only 20,000 people a year dying. 200,000 people a year hospitalized with the flu in 2004, but 20 years ago, it was only 100,000. So you get twice as many people sick, twice as many people dying. I don't know how many more people are getting the flu vaccine. They want to give it to everybody in the country, and they ran out. They had 50 million doses that went bad on them, and they couldn't give you those 50 million. I imagine there's another 50 or 100 million out there that they're giving to you people. And people are lining up. They get angry. They get in lines, and they fight. They pay $100 in back alleys to get this stuff. God, they want to shoot up. Well, I could understand a guy wanting to shoot up with heroin or smack or cocaine or something, but I find it a little bit amusing that somebody want to pay $100 to get some snake venom and monkey pus and then shoot up without the effect. But then, you know, teach his own, I guess. Now, vaccination is of a very ancient origin. It's religious, is what it is. It comes from pagan, ancient religions. It's a part of voodoo and witchcraft. And of course, today it's called scientific. It's about as scientific as the flat earth theory, but then, you know, don't let me get in the way of people's happiness and success. If you want to believe in the flat earth and vaccinations, that's fine with me. I don't care. But the statistics, the numbers, have been accumulating for 150 years. Hell, the vaccination was discredited clear back 100 years ago. Now, they've got you given 36 shots to your kids. 36 shots. By the time they're 5 years old, 36 shots. Now, people aren't doing that for no good purpose. They are fearful. They're afraid of disease, and rightfully so. Disease kills. Disease is the penalty that we pay for broken law. You break a law, you get sick. In fact, you can't get sick without breaking a law. There are 18 health laws that we got from Moses. Moses got them from God. God is our creator and designer. He says that he knows something about his design mechanism. Now, if you bought a new Ford car, you'd get a little manual with it. You know, it says the owner's instruction manual. And you'd read that and you'd say, well, gee, the manual says I got to put unleaded fuel in this hole. And I got to put ATF fluid into this hole and antifreeze in this hole and so on around the car, you know. Now, what would you think of somebody that's sticking automatic transmission fluid into the gas tank and gasoline into the crankcase and maybe some antifreeze into the differential? Wouldn't you think this guy's nuts? But, you know, if you were to give this guy an owner's manual, and if he were ignorant, didn't know much about cars, And in the owner's manual, this counterfeit, this fictitious owner manual that you call the Ford owner manual, what if you instructed this guy? In this hole over here, you put ATF. Now, that's the gas tank. You're supposed to put unleaded fuel in there, but you've deceived this guy. See, you got to the printer, and you thought you'd pull off a little skullduggery here, and so you instructed this guy to put in the wrong fluids in the wrong holes. What do you think would happen to this car? Do you think it would run very good? Think it might break down? Think it might seize up, cease to operate? Think it might die? Might not die right away. Hell, it might muddle along and might run anyway. So you could put leaded fuel into an unleaded car. It'd run. Might not run as good, might not run as far, might not run as long, but it would run for a while. And that's what we're doing with our bodies. We're sticking stuff in them. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's bad. Now, the owner's manual that we got in the Bible came from our Creator. He said, okay, well, here's the kind of fuel that you should be sticking into this machine, your body. And of course, somebody came along and said, no, that guy lying to you. Don't believe him. Don't believe those Ford engineers. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. Listen to me. pay attention to me. Let me tell you about this Ford car. Now, that's what we're doing with our bodies. We listen to doctors and pediatricians and all these people, you know, these experts and people that have letters after their names. And they said, don't listen to God. Don't listen to the Bible. Don't pay attention now to that archaic old nonsense, that Jewish diatribe. Pay attention to me. I'm scientific. Let's take a look at the history of this, the origin of vaccination. Well, as was previously stated in the last few programs, neither Jenner, with all of Jenner's fanfare and praise, nor the obscure Jesty, was the discoverer of inoculation. Inoculation was a carryover from very ancient times when superstitious fear and guesswork dominated the healing field. It comes from witch doctors is where it comes from. It's an idea of its ancient origin. An idea of this ancient origin, how old this is, can be gathered from the Lecture Memoranda, Volume 17, of the International Congress of Medicine, published in London, England in 1913. Here's what we learned. Quote, the practice of inoculation for the prevention of disease is one of considerable antiquity. The period of its discovery can only be conjectured. Now, Duan Wantari, D-H-A-N-W-A-N-T-A-R-I, the Vedic father of medicine and the earliest known Hindu physician who lived 1500 B.C., is supposed to have been the first to practice inoculation for smallpox. It is even stated that the ancient Hindus employed a vaccine which they prepared by the transmission of the smallpox virus through a cow. That comes from the History of Inoculation and Vaccination, page 6 and page 13. Unquote. Now, this common practice of disease transmission of both ancient and modern times undoubtedly has a strong relationship to the plagues and epidemics that sweep those countries where vaccination is still practiced. If this method of disease prevention had ever been successful, smallpox would have been eliminated from the world centuries ago. But smallpox persists in localities where vaccination is compulsory, and it declines where vaccination is abandoned in favor of sanitation and hygienic measures. The practice of inoculation spread like a noxious weed from the savage tribes of the forgotten past into the civilizations of Africa, Arabia, Tibet, India, and finally into Europe and America. Dr. Clements, in his pamphlet, The Superstitious Custom, traces the inoculation practices through the various modern countries previous to Jenner's day. And he writes, quote, in 1673, inoculation against smallpox appeared in Denmark. In 1778, on recommendation of the medical fraternity, two inoculation houses were established by the king in the capital. In Italy, inoculation was secretly practiced by the Neapolitans from early times, and it was freely performed by nurses who inoculated infants entrusted to their care without the knowledge of their parents. In 1722, Dr. Wright, a surgeon of Wales, refers to inoculation against smallpox in the British Isles as a very ancient custom. Jenner didn't begin his vaccinations until 1796. Now, one William Allen, then 99 years old, said inoculation had been known and used during his entire lifetime. And he well remembered his mother stating that it had been commonly done all of her life and that she got smallpox that way. The first recording of inoculation in France appears in 1712, and in 1763, a fatal epidemic of smallpox occurred in that country that wiped out a large part of the population. It was attributed to inoculation, and for a time, the government prohibited the practice. 5 years later, on the insistence of the medical fraternities, this decree was rescinded, and by the latter part of the 18th century, inoculation was again commonly practiced in France. The first record of inoculation in Ireland appears in 1723, when a medical doctor in Dublin inoculated 25 persons. Three of these died as a result, and the custom was abandoned for some time. Inoculation appears to have been first introduced in Germany in 1724. It soon fell into disfavor, however, because of the many deaths in Berlin from smallpox as a result of it. After many years of diligent medical propagandizing, the doctors were able to get the people to accept it once again. In 1754, Peverani introduced inoculation for smallpox into Rome, but smallpox soon began to spread and opposition rose to such a pitch that the practice was discontinued until the medical profession, after years of labor, persuaded the people to again submit to it. 142 years later, Carlo Ruda, professor of Materia Medica at the University of Perugia in Italy, protested against the deadly custom in these scathing words. He said, quote, "Vaccination is a monstrosity. It is a misbegotten offspring of error and ignorance, and being such, it should have no place in either hygiene or medicine. Believe not in vaccination. It is a worldwide delusion, an unscientific practice, a fatal superstition, with consequences measured today by tears and sorrow without end." Unquote. In ancient Greece and Rome, the mighty nations of mighty men, there was no inoculation, no vaccination, and there was no smallpox. These nations have been known down through history as being famous for their general habits of health, cleanliness, and stability, as well as their vigor and strength. Among the Greeks and the Romans, smallpox was unknown until it was carried there by the inoculators from other countries. Now, inoculation in America. In American inoculation for smallpox appears to have been first introduced in 1721 by Cotton Mather. He was a clergyman. His method was that of taking a toothpick and dipping it into the pus from a pustule of a smallpox patient, and then smearing that pus into a scratch on the arm of a well person. He inoculated 224 people during the first 6 months of his experimentation. Six of them died from poisoning. Six had no apparent reaction at the time, and the rest suffered reactions of varying intensity. He was bitterly attacked for recommending such a practice, as Dr. Clements, and for a time his life was in danger. This incident incited strong opposition to inoculation in the United States. A public meeting was called in Boston where the practice was deprecated as causing the death of many people. It was contended that the operation was likely to prove most dangerous to those submitting to it. In the meeting, the following, the resolution was agreed upon and published by the public authorities. It said, a resolve upon a debate by the people of Boston concerning inoculation of smallpox on the 21st day of July, 1721. Quote, it appears by numerous instances that it has proven the death of many persons even after the operation and brought distemper upon many others, which have in the end proved fatal to them, that the natural tendency of infusing such malignant filth into the blood is to corrupt and putrefy it, and if there be not a sufficient discharge of that malignity by the place of inoculation or somewhere else, it lays the foundation for many dangerous diseases, that the operation tends to spread and continue the infection in a place longer than otherwise might be, as in the case of smallpox, and that the continuance of the operation among us is likely to prove of the most dangerous consequences, by the select men of the town of Boston, July 22, 1721, unquote. Well, now, from history, then, we observe here that the founding fathers of our country were intelligent men who were vitally concerned with the health and the welfare of the people whom they governed. And although this was years before our revolution, these same men no doubt played a part in shaping the destiny of this country. This was also before the medical association got its stranglehold on the health of our people and then prostituted the art of healing to the business of making money without giving full value received. Those leaders with ideals and high purposes were not able to hold the gilded edge vaccination monster at bay for very long. The high-pressure tactics of the serum promoters finally corrupted the minds of the people, and they were induced to submit to full-scale vaccination in many states. America today is, unfortunately, one of the most lucrative fields for medical exploitation. Our Constitution promises the people freedom, but the enslavement of compulsory vaccination hounds the employees and personnel of our tax-supported institutions, such as civil service, county and state hospitals and institutions, state colleges, military service, and many public schools in some entire states. There is absolutely no proof of benefits from vaccination, and there's no sound basis for its compulsion, but it is forced into operation from year to year, and the outraged taxpayers are forced to pay for it. The useless and hazardous but inflexible law that requires vaccination in order to travel abroad brands U.S. as backward and unscientific, and other countries have learned the fallacy of vaccination and discarded it as worthless and deadly. Medical schools claim that the theory of inoculation is based on scientific facts, but history proves that this claim is false. What are these so-called scientific facts, and where are they, if any? Medical history discusses many theories and hypotheses, but it describes not a single scientific fact in support of vaccination. It is a gross misrepresentation to hold that the superstitious practice of barbarians is based on discoveries made in the fundamental sciences or on scientific facts. The testament from medical history itself proves that smallpox increased tremendously after the enforcement of vaccination, and at the present time, there are far more deaths and diseases from vaccination itself than from the diseases that these vaccinations are supposed to prevent. And the figures and case histories to support this statement are given elsewhere in this book and in many other books on vaccination. Well, what if you didn't want a vaccination? And I told you a couple of stories here. You remember the story I told you about my daughter Going over here to the Ludi school, and the school nurse says, well, your daughter's got to be shot up with some form of snake venom and monkey pus up right here. She didn't use those terms. To get her shot record up to date. Got to have your shot record up to date. I went over there and said, well, we've got an exemption here, and it's in the file. Look at it. She did, and it was. So what if, just perchance now, just what if, you wanted to legally avoid unwanted immunizations? Could you do that? Do you know how to legally avoid unwanted immunizations of all kinds? Now, let me give you a few pointers here, and let's see if we can help you along that line. The greatest part of this manuscript is taken from the work of Mrs. Grace Gerdwain of Burbank, Illinois. Our staff has rearranged and edited it, but we wish the full credit for its existence to go to this courageous woman who has for 12 years worked arduously without compensation to help her fellow Americans obtain their legal rights. So as you read this work and put its principles into practice, there are two basic axioms you never want to forget because they're the rock upon which all of our actions are based. No one anywhere, no time and under any circumstances has the right or power in this country to immunize you or your children against your will and conviction. And if they attempt to do so, you can legally charge them with assault with a deadly weapon and have the full resources of our laws behind you. Now, that's a far cry from somebody calling you up and saying, hey, these shots are compulsory. Now, the way this game is played is this. Congress or your legislature enacts a law that says, if you want to send your kid to this public school, he's got to be inoculated. You got a choice here. Don't send him to public school. Or, number two, you have to be an objector. The objection comes in three forms. You can be a religious objector, you can have a medical objection, or it can just violate your personal moral code. The different states have different rules that they follow. Now, in the United States, there isn't a single state where you have to have the shot, and you can get around it. Two states don't have any of the conventional objections that they will observe. That's Mississippi and West Virginia. Those two states, you have to get a court order. Unfortunately, you got to get a court order. So you have to go into court and plead your cause. I don't want this shot, and here's why. Here's the way they figure it in Mississippi and West Virginia. Anybody that's sincere enough to go into court and get a court order must be a real conscientious objector. They wouldn't be here to spend the money. The other states don't require you to spend the money. You just have to fill out the paperwork. Here's the way the game's played. At all times, in attempting to avoid unwanted immunization, you have the law of the land behind you. Those who would try to vaccinate you against your will are on very infirm ground. And in every compulsory immunization law in America, there are written legal exemptions and waivers which there are specifically there to protect you from the attempted tyranny of officialdom. It's not only your right, but your obligation to use it if this is what your conscience tells you. So you have to be an objector. You can be a conscientious objector. It violates my religious beliefs. You can be a medical objector. Your doctor tells you that it's going to kill you. You know, if you've got AIDS or some immune deficiency, you can't run around shooting those people up with snake venom and monkey pus. So they have to be exempted. You get that exemption down in Mississippi and up in West Virginia by going into court. Now, if you're a religious objector, you go into court and you get a court order. Now, in most states, they don't require that. Here in our state, we have a waiver. And so you have to ask for the waiver. Nobody's going to volunteer this information. They look at you and they say, it's the law. You have to have this shot. So it's up to you to know that there's an exception to the law, and I fall within the exception. I'm an objector. Then they'll fill out the waiver. Let's try this one. Let me show you something. In every case, they're going to have you sign a piece of paper. Remember this. The pharmaceutical company is not responsible for anything that happens to you when the shot is given. So here's a very simple solution. I'm not going to sign anything. I don't want you to give my child that shot. If you do, I'm going to hold you legally liable for any adverse reaction. I'll guarantee you they won't shoot your kid up. Nobody else wants to be liable or responsible, so they want you to sign the waiver. They want you to sign it and say, hey, if we give this kid this shot, we have your permission, and if anything happens, you're totally responsible. That's the way that game is played. So if you sign up, then you're responsible. If there's an adverse reaction, that's your fault, not anybody else's. You can sit there and say, but the law said I had to get the shot. But the law also said there's an exception in here if you want to avail yourself of it. Every state has that. In Mississippi and West Virginia, it's a court order. In other states, it's a waiver. In other states, it's an objection. It's up to you to avail yourself of it. If you're ignorant of the law, too bad for you. Somebody says, that's not fair. Well, God, wake up. Smell the coffee. Get off Sesame Street and wake up to reality. Article 1. In all of your contacts with any member of the school, public health, or legal establishment, always remain calm, courteous, and humbly reverent toward their position. You are only asking of them that which the law duty binds them to give to you. There's no reason or advantage to be gained by antagonizing them. Most of these officials believe that they are discharging their trust as outlined by the law. If they're overstepping the law, then it's up to you to very diplomatically bring the true facts to their attention. but do so without attempting to belittle them. The more you can preserve their ego, the more easily and quickly you're likely to get what you desire. And that is a waiver of immunization. So rule one, do not harass, belittle, or antagonize public officials unnecessarily. Article 2. All compulsory laws concerning vaccination, including the military, contain exceptions and waivers. Did you get that? Even the military contains exceptions and waivers. And it is these protections placed in the laws which you may legally use to exclude yourself and your children. Surprisingly, these exceptions were placed there not for your benefit, although you may take advantage of them. They are placed there for the protection of the government and the pharmaceutical industry. And why is that? Well, let us assume that these exceptions were not there and everyone was actually forced to be immunized against their will and over their objection. Should a child die or become mentally or physically disabled or incapacitated, the parent would then have the perfect case to sue the doctor, the school, the health department, even the state legislature for enormous damages. Now, since they allowed no exceptions, they must accept full responsibility for all of the adverse consequences of the law. However, if exception waivers are placed in the law, the responsibility is then transferred back to the parent. So if a child should be injured by immunization, the official can say, well, the parent should have exempted him if they thought there was any danger. Therefore, there is in truth no such thing as a compulsory vaccination law in this country. They are all, in essence, voluntary. The problem is that practically no one in authority will let you know this fact. Now, there's one error in that Article 2 statement. You can't sue the legislature. You can't sue the state. The 11th Amendment bars that. But you could sue the school officials and public officials. So never sign anything. You know, you should be able to live your life from birth to death and never sign your name a single time. Those people are called common law freemen. And every time that you sign your name, you impair your liberty to some degree. You impair your liberty to some degree every time you sign your name. Now, I'm not here to tell you not to sign your name. I'm just here to tell you that every time you do, you impair your liberty. So pay attention to what you're signing. Rule 2, then, there are no compulsory vaccination laws. All of these laws are voluntary, and you are held responsible for the adverse results that come upon you or your children. Let me take a break and give you a reminder here that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers or the sponsors or the management or staff of this network or of the radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to my website. That's georgegordon.org or call the law school direct 417-273-4967. That's georgegordon.org or call direct for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the flu vaccine shortage. Now, if you happen to be one of those people that don't want the vaccine and you feel like you're being pressured or somebody's pushing you into it against your will and over your objection, then here's Article 3. While all immunization laws have exceptions that you can use, the wording in each state differs, and it's up to you to know the exact wording for your state to make the proper request for waiver. This information can be obtained in one of two ways. First, you can go to the reference section of your local library, look in the state statute revised law book under public health law or communicable disease sections. The list of immunization requirements will appear first, and then the exemptions will be given. Usually one or two provisions will be listed, either on religious or medical grounds or both. And you may call or write your state representative and ask for a copy of the immunization law of your state. This is part of his job, and he will usually send you a prompt reply. Typical examples from various state laws and rulings read like this. In New Mexico, here's the exemption. It says, exemption by certification of religious objection. A parent or guardian who cannot obtain an affidavit from an officer of a recognized religious denomination as described in paragraph 1 hereof, but whose religious beliefs held either individually or jointly with others, do not permit the administration of vaccine or other immunizing agents, may apply for an exemption from immunization by submitting a certificate of conscientious objection to immunization. The certificate must be signed in the presence of a notary public. Well, that's not exactly true either. You don't have to sign it in the presence of a notary public if you were to make an asseveration and sign it at the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses. That's neither here nor there. Most of you people sign affidavits, and it's not a big deal. Having a notarized signature, that's all. I oppose, I'm objecting to vaccination. Now, that's New Mexico. In Connecticut, the section is cited at 19-13-D18B2A, and here's what it says for you people up in Connecticut. Quote, health certificate. Each child admitted to a center or group daycare home shall be examined and have a health certificate of admission and an annual update signed by a licensed physician or his authorized physician assistant or nurse practitioner. Such certificate shall show that the child has been successfully immunized against diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, measles, and rubella. By policy, we follow the standards of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices of the United States Public Health Service, and we have honored requests for religious or medical exemption. However, we will need a statement for medical exemption from a physician licensed to practice medicine in Connecticut, unquote. So up in Connecticut, all you need is religious objection or a signed letter from your doctor that says I'm opposed to this or it's a danger to my health. Remember, 90% of pediatricians do not vaccinate their children. Why don't you look for one of those 90% of the pediatricians who don't vaccinate their children and tell them I don't want mine vaccinated either for health reasons, and I want you to sign this waiver for me. See how simple that is? You probably never heard of such a thing, but I guess it's time that somebody informed you that there's a choice. Alabama, Section 2. Down in Alabama, it shall be the responsibility of the parents or guardians of children to have their children immunized or tested as required by Section 1. Did you get that? Immunized or tested. Tested. Why don't you opt for the test? Section 3. The provisions of this act shall not apply if 1. In the absence of an epidemic or immediate threat thereof, the parent or guardian of the child shall object thereto in writing on grounds that such immunization or testing conflicts with his religious tenets and practices. 2. Certification by a competent medical authority providing individual exemption from the required immunization or testing is presented to the admissions officer of the school. So now the school says to you, well, we got to have this kid's shot record. Okay. Well, then, why don't you go to your doctor and say, listen, I'm opposed to these shots. What do you think, doc? And if the doctor says, oh, God, these shots are really great. They're wonderful. You need a new doctor. Now remember, 90% of pediatricians are shooting your kids up. Most Americans, I believe the number is 89% or 88%. 88, I think this number is on. 88% of Americans are in favor of or have no objection to immunization. Only 12% of us are concerned about it. You know, there's just a tiny minority of us, 12%, that have any concern about immunizations and the flu vaccine and so on. Hell, people in this country are so excited about getting their flu shots that they're willing to buy from total strangers what's reported to them or purported to be flu vaccine, and they're paying up to $100 to get it. $100 to shoot antifreeze into your veins. Mercury. come on, guys. Come on, we can be smarter than that. You know, we call dogs dumb animals, but they're not running around shooting up, are they? Sure as hell ain't shooting up voluntarily. You take them into the vet and they shoot them up. Well, it makes money. And dogs are pretty healthy animals, and you can shoot them up with these toxic poisons, and it doesn't kill them. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't cause any real obnoxious side effects, at least not right away. Most Americans can take these shots. I mean, we're healthy enough that you can take these shots and it doesn't kill you. The tragic part of it is that it has some pretty dramatic side effects on a lot of people. It kills some, cripples a bunch more, but by and large, it cripples your immune system, but you won't know that until you get cancer at age 46. Now, cancer is an epidemic in America. I mean, look, boys and girls, pay attention here. When 50% of a population gets a disease, that's more than an epidemic, it's a pandemic. Cancer is worldwide. It's a pandemic. And it's got a cause, there's an effect, and there's a prevention. In fact, there's a cure. If you've got cancer, you can cure it. If you haven't got it, you can prevent it. Once you get it, you're always going to have it. It'd be a hell of a lot better, I know, if you could avoid it. And it's a proven fact, the history and the documents in your libraries, in those dusty old leather-bound volumes, attest to these facts. No unvaccinated person ever got cancer. Well, that's as of 1900. I suppose you could get cancer even without vaccinations because you could smoke. You could do 100 other things that could give you cancer beside vaccination. But at least as of 1900, Dr. Clark had made an observation. And while it may not be 100% true, accurate, and correct, by God, it's a pretty good piece of information, a pretty good piece of evidence. Let's take a look here at New York. Now, up in New York State, except from a letter from Larry Lombardi, 50th District Chairman on the Committee on Health, enclosed is a copy of Section 2164 of the Public Health Law, which requires certain inoculations for school children. Subdivision 9 of this section provides that immunizations are not required for children whose parents or guardians are members of a religion whose teachings are contrary to the mandated immunizations. Now let me pause right there. A lot of people think that, my God, in order for me to get this exemption, I've got to leave the Catholic Church and join the Mennonites or something. No, you don't have to do that. Not at all. You know, you can have religious beliefs that run counter to the orthodoxy of your church. You know, there's a lot of Catholics that are in favor of birth control. Did you know that? The official doctrine of your church is opposed to it. Well, at least some forms of it. But that doesn't mean that every Catholic necessarily has to subscribe to every letter of every doctrine of the Catholic Church or the Methodist Church or somebody else's. Although, as a matter of law, when you say I'm a conscientious objector Catholic, you know, they look at you with jaundiced eye and say, well, that's an oxymoron because all Catholics are killers. So if you're going to claim conscientious objector status from the military, well, then you ought to reconsider calling yourself a Catholic or something. But you could walk in there and say, hey, listen, I'm opposed to these vaccinations. Maybe even the priest in your church is opposed to vaccinations. Why don't you find one? I'll bet you that you can't find every Catholic priest in the United States who's in favor of vaccination. I'll bet you'll find one or two out there. Have him sign a letter for you, and then take it into the school or the public health officials and say, well, I'm opposed to it. I'm opposed to it religiously. And here's a letter signed by my pastor or my preacher who says that he's opposed to it. And millions of us, or thousands of us, or 150 of us in this church, we don't practice that, even though the church itself is in favor of it or something else. And that'll carry the day for you. It's your personal moral belief in some states. While that isn't acceptable in most legal forums, just your personal moral code will do it for you in many states. I'm just personally opposed to it. And remember, here's your kicker. They'll want you to sign a permission slip, a waiver, so that they can vaccinate your kid. You tell them, I'm not signing nothing. I don't want it. And if you've got the power to vaccinate my kid against my will and over my objection, you do it at your own risk. And if there's any adverse consequences, as I told one school nurse, you may rest assured litigation will surely follow. You got to write that down. It's one of my better lines. If you think that it's the law and you want to do this, accepting full responsibility upon yourself, remember this, that if you vaccinate my child and any adverse reaction occurs, you may rest assured litigation will surely follow. Gotta love it. It's one of my better lines. Going on here in New York, we're advised by officials of the State Education Department that parents' objections need not be stated in an affidavit prepared by the school's attorney. According to the department, the objection is valid if it is contained in a letter from a church official. It doesn't have to be the doctrine of the Pope or the Catholic Church or the Baptists or anybody else. Just a church official. Can you find a church official? Should be a preacher. That says, I'm opposed to it, our church is opposed to it, and we don't want it. Now, if you can't find that, well, then you'll have to use something else. But here again, if you walk up to your preacher and you say, well, listen, I'm opposed to it. And your preacher says, oh, you shouldn't be. That's good for you. Well, look, Don, I'm opposed to it. Now, sign this letter for me, and if you don't, I won't put any money on the plate. And every preacher is very sensitive to offerings. Now, written on church letterhead, of course, stating that the parents or the guardians are bona fide members of the religion and that the tenets of the religion include a prohibition against immunization. Now, the other state laws are usually very close to the examples given here. Rule 3. You should know your own state law so that you can conform to its exact requirements for exemption. Now, remember this. Every state in the United States is a foreign country. The laws are all different. I don't know what the laws of Texas or North Dakota and South Dakota are. Each one of those legislatures have made their own laws concerning immunizations and exemptions. But every state's got an exemption. And it's written in plain English. You can just read this. You know, it tells you the story. I'm not practicing rocket science here or some mystic religion. Just read the terms and conditions. And of course, if you've been to public school, you may have a problem with your reading. If you've been homeschooled, you should be able to understand that with clarity. If you've been to public school, you may have a little problem. Read it twice, read it three times, mull it over a little bit, maybe talk it over with some friends. I think even a public school kid can understand this. Article 4, there are two basic reasons for exception, medical or religious. That's what they boil down to. It's medical or religious, although a couple of three states will take just your personal moral code. I'm just opposed to it, period. But if it's medical or religious, which one you choose will often depend upon the wording of the law in your state and your personal convictions. And we shall first discuss medical exemption. While laws do vary, nearly all states require that a note or certificate of waiver be submitted by a physician licensed in the state of residence. In some areas where states are small and people continually travel from one to another, such as up in New England, you know, from Connecticut to Rhode Island or Massachusetts or New York, for business, a statement from a physician in a contiguous state will be accepted. So if you're living in Texas and you want to get an exemption from your doctor, and maybe you live over in Orange, Texas, and you go to a doctor in Louisiana, all you got to do is tell them, oh, no, my doctor's in Louisiana. So I live right next to the Arkansas border. You know, my doctor might be in Mountain Home or Harrison, Arkansas. Now, in this letter, it's usually necessary to state the reason for the requested waiver and the length of time that it should extend. Many laws limit all such letters to a school year, and they must be renewed every year. So the medical exemption, you know, I mean, let's suppose you don't have a religious, objection to vaccination. Well, then it's got to be medical, doesn't it? Well, if it's got to be medical, then you need a doctor that agrees with you that these vaccines and vaccination is probably medically a poor practice. Just tell your doctor like you tell your preacher, if you don't sign this for me, then I'll go find a doctor that will. Keeping in mind that if pediatricians, 90% of them now, are familiar with vaccines, and they don't vaccinate their own child. They'll vaccinate yours. They may even encourage you. You walk in there and tell them, hey, listen, I've been reading some literature on vaccination. I think it's a People are practicing. I don't want to do it. Give me a waiver so I can give it to my school board. Maybe your kids had 5 or 10. Well, he survived 5 or 10. Why give him 20 or 30? You know, at some point in time, this kid may get really sick or kill him. I mean, just because you've taken some poison once or twice in your life doesn't say that we can't stop. Many laws limit all such letters to one school year, so keep that one in mind. The two most valid reasons for medical waiver that I know of are the fear of allergic reaction in a sensitive child and to prevent possible damage to a weakened immune system. Both of these can occur in a child who has been immunized. And since no one but the physician and the parent will be held responsible for their consequences, it's up to them to protect the child. It's possible that some states may require the letter from an MD or a DO, but many will allow an exemption letter from a chiropractor if it's courteously and properly written as outlined above. Just take it over to your local friendly chiropractor, and if they won't take it from him, well, then you got to go see a medical doctor. That's all. It's worth a $25 or $50 visit. Now, medical waivers, this is Rule 4. Medical waivers are always valid, but must be written to fit each state law and often need to be renewed annually. Article 5. Most people will be best served by a religious exemption unless the state law is so restrictive as to make this nearly impossible to obtain. The only church that is legally opposed to vaccination is called the Christian Science Church. They took the matter to the courts and obtained a legal ruling of exemption. And it's because of this that state laws recognize the religious exemption. The church to which I personally belong is also by its tenets against immunization for its adherents, and they are encouraged to go to jail if necessary before submitting to this procedure. Since it is a church at large, they're able to enroll members throughout the entire United States and would be pleased to consider any applicant who is without present church affiliation and who desires the legitimate support of others in his convictions. Hey, let me tell you, there are hundreds of little churches out here that are opposed to immunization. Hundreds of them. Thousands of them. There's about 330,000 churches in the United States, and I can guarantee you that 6,000 of them are opposed to it that I know of personally. 6,000. The unregistered churches. I'll just bet you that every pastor in every unregistered church in America is opposed to it. In some states, an official letter from a church authority is required before exemption will be given. In others, it's only necessary to submit a notarized letter that you adhere to religious tenets which hold vaccination against God's laws. All officialdom becomes a little shaky when you mention religious freedom, as it's one of our basic American rights, and no one wants to be made the heavy in denying anyone religious free exercise. The general desire of most health officials is to exert as much control as possible while assuming as little or no responsibility. If you place them in a position where they must either give you a waiver or assume additional responsibility, you can rest assured you'll get the waiver. School officials are chicken. They don't want the responsibility. Lay it on them. Remember that line. You shoot my kid up, you may rest assured litigation will follow. So Rule 5 waivers can usually be obtained by letter from a church official, certifying that you're a member of a church that recommends against immunizations for its adherents. Many states will also allow exemption on religious grounds if you send them a notarized letter stating that you adhere to the beliefs of such a church, even if you are not one of their members. Article 6, the foregoing, may work for school exemptions, but are there any such waivers in the armed forces? Yes, all branches of the military service provide immunization waivers. And again, if they did not, you could sue them for millions of dollars if a reaction occurred from their immunizations. By their having these waiver provisions, you become responsible if you react. So when you first sign up or enlist, this is the key, when you first sign up or enlist, you must state your objection to the vaccinations and tell whether it is religious or medical. If you don't, then later on when the Army says we're going to shoot you up and send you off to Iraq and you object, you'll be in deep ditch. So it's got to be when you enlist is when you apply for and make known in writing that you're opposed to vaccinations, either medical or religious, such as allergies or low tolerance to medication of any kind. So if you do not show objection when you enlist, you've given them the right to do what they will with you. So then if there's any difficulty, the same rules apply here as in school. Never forget, even though you may be in the service, no one has the right to immunize you against your will. You do not give up your constitutional rights when you join the armed forces. That's not exactly correct. That's another legal conclusion here written by the author. That's not quite true. When you sign up for the military, you surrender and give up a lot, many, most of your constitutional rights and come under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. But that's another story for another day. You do not give up your religious rights to the vaccination waiver because you join the Army if you make it known at the time you join. So Rule 6. The rules that govern school vaccination exemption also apply to the military, so don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. They do not know or are hiding the facts of the law from you. Article 7. Well, what about international travel? Can I go around the world without vaccination? Well, the World Health Organization in Geneva grants American visitors the right to refuse vaccination when traveling internationally. However, if an area that you wish to enter is infected, you may be detained until the public health servant gives you the go at his discretion. Thousands of people who do travel worldwide each year without shots. And they do so, and you may so do if that is your choice. You know, I personally have traveled over much of the world with my family in the last 10 years and have never taken any immunizations, nor were we ever detained for a moment. So why don't you write to the United Nations World Health Organization and get the information? It would be wise to request a copy of Foreign Rules and Regulations, Part 71, Title 42, on immunization when you receive your passport. So don't forget the basic rule. No one will vaccinate you against your will. They may try to coerce you, intimidate you, threaten you. But if you stick by your guns, I don't want it. Somebody said to me, my God, they'll put you in isolation, quarantine. Where in the hell do you think quarantine came from? It came from God and the Bible, for crying out loud. Why should you be upset with quarantine? Well, of course, most people are opposed to the Bible, so I can see why they'd be opposed to quarantine. I'll sure as hell take quarantine over a shot. Then you know you can make up your own mind. So in Rule 7, you may travel wherever you wish in the world without vaccination. And the worst that can happen is that in very rare circumstances, you could be detained in quarantine temporarily. Well, there's a lot of good reasons why you should not get vaccinated. And if you want to be vaccinated, why, that's certainly your right. And I certainly wouldn't want to get in your way. Now keep in mind that the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do it 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are believed to be true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. If it wasn't, I wouldn't present it. Now the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and the publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to you, our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out does not necessarily mean that the authors of these publications that we recommend or endorse are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans who do not endorse the opinions or beliefs expressed here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Not everybody agrees with us. I'm about out of time. That'll just about conclude the program here on the flu vaccine shortage. So remember, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, there's the signal. Says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.